Welcome to the People in the Red Vest, a podcast of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, the IFRC. I'm your host, Alexandra Sasha Goryshuk, and in each episode, we feature inspiring, surprising, and thought-provoking conversations with people who dedicate their lives to helping others.
Eco anxiety is one of the main issues the more commonly heard. It can be defined as this chronic fear because of the impacts of climate and environment, and it includes this physical sensation of anxiety and worry and stress and very powerful and heavy emotions like hopelessness and just feeling that all the things that we are doing is just doesn't matter because the future is not going to change. Recognizing this can help us to better support people that are experiencing all of these heavy sensations and thoughts.
My guest today is Ana Gabriela Mejia Silva. Ana is a psychologist and a volunteer for the Ecuadorian Red Cross. Welcome.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really feeling extremely honored to be in this amazing podcast.
We're very excited to have you. I know, Ana, you're not just a psychologist and a volunteer for the Ecuadorian Red Cross. You're also a youth ambassador for Latin America and the Caribbean and a youth advisor for the Red Cross Red Crescent Climate Center. Can you tell us what both of those things are?
Sure. In the case of my role within Climate Center, I'm one of the youth advisors. Climate Center has this initiative of including youth in their process of getting involved with different projects and involving them in to ensure that the youth voices are being reflected and are being taken into account in the work that they are doing. And we are six advisors of the different regions representing the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement. And I am representing the Americas region. So it has been a really amazing opportunity for getting a global insight and global perspective of the different matters that are affecting us as youth within the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement. And my other role as youth ambassador from Latin America and the Caribbean, it's not within the Red Cross Red Crescent movement, but is as part of the Connecting Climate Minds project that focuses on addressing the intersections between climate and mental health. And I've been also connecting with different actors of the region, but also globally, to better understand this issue.
And this is run by a university, correct?
Yes, this project is run by Imperial College London and supported by the Wellcome Trust. And it has been a really fundamental opportunity to start exploring the connection between these issues and gain a global perspective of this, recognizing the different topics and necessities of every region.
Thanks, Ana. So today we're going to talk about the intersection of mental health, which you work on as a psychologist, and climate, which you also work on in all of those other roles. But before we go there, I just wanted to alert our viewers and listeners that potentially we may be interrupted by some blackouts that you're unfortunately experiencing in Ecuador, where you are right now, where you're from. And could you explain why the blackouts? Are they caused by climate change or do they have a financial component?
Sure. Unfortunately, during the last 2 weeks, the government in Ecuador has declared an energy emergency. So it is important to understand that the main source of energy of Ecuador comes from hydroelectrics. And the places where these hydroelectrics are located are suffering severe droughts. So there is no way that we can generate electricity, which has put the government in a really extreme position. So we are facing from 6 to 8 hours of energy cuts, no electricity, and it has been like a real challenge for us to adapt ourselves to this, and also on people that their livelihood depends on using electricity. It also poses like more difficulties in terms of how to adapt to this new situation and how to cope with socioeconomic barriers and stressors that we also face in the country.
Thanks for that, Anna. So just in case we get interrupted, we'll try to reconnect, but this is why. So it's good for our audience to be aware. So as part of all of your roles, you've become a real voice among youth around the world about the need to address the mental health impact of climate change. Why do you think climate change in particular is something we should single out in terms of its impact on mental health?
I think it is a very important issue that is being discussed more broadly right now. And for us within the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, climate change and mental health, talking about well-being, is represented in the 2 of the 5 global challenges that we identify in IFRC Strategy 2030. So that's why it is really important to acknowledge this, because they represent a global challenge that continue to be analyzed in a separate way. And it is important to start connecting these issues and to start reflecting how, as we face more severe challenges in terms of climate change, how this connects with our well-being, and acknowledging that this affects communities at different levels, and this impacts the way we feel, the way we behave, the way that we make decisions, the way we decide to take or not to take action. And as Red Cross, Red Crescent members, it also affects the way that we respond to communities, the way that we support them, and also how it also represents an emotional distress for ourselves as we are responding to this and to how it affects our teams. So all of these elements are related to mental health. And I just want to highlight that mental health is related with our state of well-being. Our state of well-being that allow us to function every day, to improve our capabilities, to set new goals and to start planning to achieve them, and also how we contribute within the communities. And when we talk about climate,
it poses new complex situations and new stressors, and new stressors
that can be sometimes overpass the emotional resources of people to cope with these extreme adverse events. So it is important to start reflecting about this and that we can explore the situation with a broad perspective.
I don't think people are used to thinking about the mental health impact of climate change. I know that you're doing everything you can to highlight the issue, but do you think it's starting to get the attention it deserves?
I think that there has been more awareness and understanding in the last years, and mainly in research and policy fields. It is very important, all the steps that are being taken in order to advance in this agenda. But it's also very important that we in the different spaces that we are to keep advocating to connect these two issues and to start exploring this. I think that some element has been very important that it is really interesting to highlight. For example, since last year in the sixth assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change, the IPCC, it was the first time that mental health and well-being was included. So it sets like the road in order to explore. So there are different parts of the society, public and private sector, civil society, ourselves as humanitarian sector also sets us like the path in order to start exploring and start reflecting and start discussing about this issue. So I think it is like a really good start since recent years that we are talking more, more broadly, more open about this matter. And also, talking itself about mental health, it still represents a challenge. So I think that when we connect this, we also need to understand that in different communities and in different countries, between global north and global south, the perception is going to be different and the barriers are going to be different. So that's why we also need to have contextualized discussions to understand better the context in order to understand properly the issues that communities and countries are facing between these two matters.
Last year, at last year's COP 28 in Dubai, health was on the agenda for the very first time at COP. Was mental health specifically on the agenda?
So I think it was a good start. Last year in COP28 was definitely a precedent for health, for including health in the agenda. And it opened this space and this platform to start talking about the issue. In this case, there were several events and side events that were related to mental health and climate change. And to talk about the connection between these two issues. And also, there were a very important statement within the COP28 Declaration of Climate and Health, in which I would like to highlight one of the common objectives that came up from that resolution, and is that promoting a comprehensive response to address the impacts of climate change on health, including, for example, mental health and psychosocial support and well-being, loss of traditional medicinal knowledge, loss of livelihoods and culture, and climate-induced displacements and migration. And I think that the fact that at least mental health and psychosocial
will be included in the COP declaration.
So I think that it was a very good start, but also there is so much more that we can do, that we can keep advocating for, and that we definitely need to keep working also as Red Cross and Red Crescent movement as well.
What specific investments do you think these next steps may need?
First, I think it's really important to support research projects at different levels, to acknowledge lived experience groups like youth or indigenous people that are being affected by these issues, and to support this in different regions in order to have a real representation on how this problem is being experienced by different actors. Also, within our sector, the humanitarian sector, I think that we also need to invest not only like economically in supporting this, but also in having these rich conversations, in having these connections between people that are setting the tone in the interventions within the Red Cross and Red Crescent, and also to bring more people in the table in order to better understand the problem. I think those elements are very important, and also invest in developing tools that are contextualized to support people with mental health needs and mental health challenges within the context of climate change. Because we have a lot of tools that are very important, but are not well contextualized to this issue. So they can sometimes put like another challenge to people that are responding to this matter.
Last year, you and I actually met at COP 28. This year, there's another COP, COP 29. I don't know if you'll be there, but if you were, what would be your message to the participants this year? How would it change? Would it change from last year?
Last year I was very new to all of this process. COP28 was a really great experience for me. I learned a lot from all the people, all the amazing people that I met within and outside the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement. And this year, I think that I will keep highlighting and advocating why youth needs to be included in a meaningful, significant way, and why we as Red Cross and Red Crescent youth, also we are leading transformations within our communities, we are leading projects, we are having these conversations and understanding these issues. So that's why we need to be included in these higher level events. And it's an opportunity to showcase what we are doing and to recognize as well all the work that we do within our local communities. So I will still be advocating for youth to acknowledge and have a meaningful youth participation. But also I will raise my voice for mental health and climate. I think that last year we definitely have a really great start. But right now it is important that we also keep advancing on this as climate change challenges are becoming more complex and more severe. We also need to invest in understanding more the issue on keep supporting research and including youth in this matter and the process, and also recognize cultural practices of indigenous populations that can be very important to support people's mental health during this climate crisis. So I think that those will be like my main messages, that recognize we all experience these challenges in different ways, and we also different people have different ways to cope that we can learn from and that we can incorporate in the work that we are doing. So I think those elements are really important to recognize, to highlight, to showcase, and to acknowledge.
I heard this podcast. You were interviewed by the BBC for their podcast that they did at COP last year. And you talked about eco-anxiety. What is eco-anxiety and how serious of a mental health issue is it?
Recently, we've been able to start conceptualizing the impacts of climate in mental health. Eco-anxiety is one of the main issues, the more commonly heard.
It can be defined as the impacts of climate and environment, because of the physical sensation of anxiety, worry, stress, and very powerful heavy emotions, hopelessness, uncertainty, just feeling that all the things that we are doing just doesn't matter because the future is not going to change.
So there is a lot of future uncertainty, despair, and it came from being exposed to all of the bad news that are going on around the world, or feeling this deep uncertainty about the future of the planet, of recognizing the lack of commitment of the parties that should have the stronger commitments. So it is an issue that is affecting people at different level, but youth is really affected by this. And youth are the ones that are being facing these issues because of the different spaces they are enrolled. For example, people that are really into the climate justice spaces, negotiations, these high-level climate events, advocating and raising the voices of youth, they also are being exposed to a lot of stressors that can affect their well-being and that can keep promoting this eco-anxiety. So it is really affecting the way that people are making their decisions, the way that they are just taking action or decided not to take action because the future is with full of uncertainty. So I think that recognizing this,
I think
also can recognizing
prevent
this
us
also can
to
prevent us
or can help us to
or can help us
better
to
support people that are experiencing
better support
all of these
people
heavy
that are sensations
experiencing
and
all of these heavy sensations
how this is affecting their behavior
how this is affecting their behavior. Some specific communities, you mentioned indigenous communities earlier. Do you think this eco-anxiety and mental health impact of climate change is particularly affecting communities that are very closely connected to the natural environment, like indigenous communities that you have many of in Ecuador, as well as farmers, fishing communities, and others?
Yes, definitely. There are very amazing and very important cultural rituals and practices that are a very important part of the community's identities that are deeply connected with the land, with earth, with nature. And experiencing, facing, and witnessing the impacts of climate change in their communities is affecting not only how they are feeling about this, but also affecting more deeply their livelihoods, their loss of their belongings, which can lead to high levels of anxiety and emotional distress. And for example, there is research about farmers and fishing communities that experience high levels of suicide because of this issue. So you can tell that indigenous communities depends on land because of is their mean of substance. So when they had these impacts, they don't really know what else to do and how to cope with these and what else to do to provide for their families. So it poses a very, very difficult situation. And in Ecuador, we've been experiencing since severe droughts and also severe floodings, but it affects the way that also indigenous communities are organized. It affects the way they make decisions about their crops, about how they engage with the rituals, and on the contrary, how they are going to change something in order to protect their livelihoods. So it is affecting deeply these groups, and it is also important that we start understanding this matter and looking how we can support them, how we can also learn from them, because they also have very, they have very meaningful practices that we also can incorporate and learn, and that can help us also to be more connected with nature, with land, with earth, and acknowledge that it's important to take up, protect it.
Let me turn to you a little bit, your background. You're involved with so many different things. What came first? The Red Cross, climate, mental health? How did you become involved with all of that?
I think that's an interesting question, Sasha. This year, I'm going to be 4 years volunteer of the Red Cross, and it has been a really amazing path of a lot of learning, challenges as well. But I've been discovering this new phase of myself in this situation, and it was full of growth, a journey full of growth. So I think that Red Cross has a very broad field in which you can get enrolled as a volunteer. And in my case, it was easy because as I am a psychologist, I'm also enrolled within mental health and psychosocial support unit within my national society. So that's the main way in which I connect these two topics that are really important for me, that are part from my professional career, and also which is really moving me and motivating me. And also, in this path, I've been connecting with other situations, other topics, being acknowledging my own challenges as a young leader, and also the challenges that other young volunteers in my national society face, and took these opportunities and these platforms to showcase those challenges, to advocate, to raise the voice for them, and to keep promoting this meaningful youth participation. And in that way, I came with being connected with climate as well. So I think that right now I'm managing well to connect all of these issues together, all of these topics together. So I think that's one of the positive elements of Red Cross and Red Crescent.
So you're a psychologist, as we've said a couple of times now, and you graduated with this psychology degree just as COVID-19 pandemic really hit. Not a great time to find a job and start a career, but in your particular field, this actually was an opportunity in a way, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely, it was not a good timing. I was just 1 month before the pandemic started, I get graduated. So it was a very challenging situation to navigate and find out what to do when we all were locked down. But I had the opportunity to be enrolled in an amazing project led by some colleagues that were focused on providing psychological first aid and psychosocial support to frontline workers during the pandemic. And this was a very important opportunity also to contribute with people that were outside there helping in the front line, doing a very amazing job. So that's how I started like to get connected with this community side of psychology and having a broad perspective on this. And then also that was the time where I get enrolled within the Ecuadorian Red Cross. So I think that the pandemic definitely opened a space to start talking more open about mental health, about these issues, because we all were affected by this in some degree. And I think it was one of the positive outcomes of the pandemic that more people start seeking for help because of their mental health challenges. More people are advocating for it. More resources are available for it. So it has their pros and their cons, but I was enrolled in that project at that time.
I want to bring in another issue to this conversation, social media. So young people are also very engaged on social media, and for the better or worse. What do you think are the pros and cons in terms of young people's being on social media? And what are the downsides psychologically, mental health-wise, with this digital social life that youth, especially during the pandemic, had online more than in person?
Well, I think that social media is an important element of our lives. We, as youth, we grew connected with internet and all the different platforms that are out there. So I think that we cannot skip it, or we cannot just acknowledging that it's a very important part of our lives. But also, I think that also social media has their cons in terms of it fosters a lot of comparison, where depends on the content that you are consuming based on the people that you are following. So it can also make you think that you are not doing enough, that you are not putting effort in the things that you're doing because of people are living all of these great, amazing experiences. But the fact is that we all show what we want to show in social media. So maybe we are having a really, really bad day and we're not going to post it because it is not well accepted, it's not looking good. So I think that it can really foster this social anxiety or this fear of missing out something that can affect mental health and well-being. I've been there facing this during the pandemic when a lot of people were going out and doing these amazing things. And I was like, okay, I was very afraid of going out. So I was staying in my home. I was taking care of me, taking care of my family. But I definitely was feeling this anxiety of, okay, they are doing these things and I'm not. So I think that social media also needs to be connected with a lot of self-care and a lot of ways in which we also can get disconnected from these issues, from all of the things that are going on. And if we connect this also with climate, we are exposed to a lot of information in social media, a lot of news, some of them are fake news, and this can foster this, again, eco-anxiety on the things that are going on in the other side of the world and all of the things that I can really, my brain can get connected to this and keep thinking and thinking and thinking. I definitely think that it has these deep challenges and that we all need to establish these strategies to take care of ourselves. But also, social media is a great tool to get connected with people that are on the other side of the world. So, for example, I get the opportunity to get to know many amazing Red Cross people, and I get connected with them through social media. Some of them are in Armenia or in Europe or in Indonesia, but you know, you are engaging with them in social media, you are participating, you are getting to know what the youth networks are doing and being inspired by them. So I think it's also a great tool to get connected with others, to get inspired, and to also support what other amazing young people are doing outside. So it has their pros and their cons.
Thanks for that, Anna. I really like how you said you have to, with social media is good, but you have to practice a lot of self-care, right?
Yes.
While engaging with it. I know you were also part of a team that won an award from the IFRC's Solferino Academy for an innovative project that addressed mental health during COVID. I think it was basically a game called the Challenge Box. Can you tell us about it? What was the Challenge Box?
Thanks, Sasha. This project is really, really close to my heart. I am the leader of the project, and the project is being designed by four volunteers of the Ecuadorian Red Cross, by Emily, Jefferson, Jennifer, and myself. And this has been a really amazing journey of learning how to solve conflicts, making decisions, improve communication skills. So it has been a definitely personal but also professional growth. We were one of the winners of IFRC Limitless Solferino Academy, and it's something that we are really proud of. This project is called Tu Dilo in Spanish. In English, it can be translated as You Say. So we are focusing on promoting adolescents' mental health through using elements of gamification. So we are using challenges, we are using games, we are using different dynamics in order to promote a better understanding in three topics, in self-knowledge, in identifying emotions, and also providing coping mechanisms so they can be better prepared to face the different challenges that now we have every single day. So this challenge box, Tu Dilo box, has been changing and improving during all of these years. Since we had the opportunity to have seed funding and to do a lot of testing and validations. So right now, I can proudly say that we also had the support of our national society. So the project has been escalated to all of the branches in Ecuador. So now we have teams in the different branches of the country, which is something that we are really proud of, because the first time that we start working on this, we never imagined that we were going to came this far. And we are still working on that. We are still looking for spaces to keep promoting the project, to keep highlighting why this is important, to just keep fostering a safe and open space for adolescents to reflect on their mental health, to understand why this is important, and to have contextualized tools, easy tools, so they can rely on and keep promoting and working on their mental health.
You grew up in Quito, right? In Ecuador, the capital. How connected do you feel to the environment yourself? And how do you manage your own feelings about the ways our environment is changing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I grew up in Quito. I'm from Quito, the capital of Ecuador. I'm surrounded by amazing mountains. In front of me is just this amazing mountain, the Pichincha Mountain. And I think that nature is a very important part of like my life, and growing up in Ecuador as one of the most biodiverse countries on earth, it also make you feel connected. I'm not going to lie, I'm also a very city girl, because I grew up in this city, but also the fact that I'm like 30 to 40 minutes away to go to a park where I am surrounded by nature. The fact that we are like 6 hours away from the Amazon. And I really enjoy to go there, because you definitely feel completely different when you go to the Amazon of Ecuador, and you really witness how amazing nature is and how you can feel deeply connected to this. So as we've been experiencing the different challenges around climate, it has been very also fostering a lot of anxiety personally, because here we have these amazing volcanoes, but some of them are losing their glaciers because of the increase of temperatures. We also are losing a lot of spaces that were very important for people in the city because of the impacts of climate change. So I think that in my case, witnessing that changes during all of the last years has been a challenge for me, but also motivation to start reflecting how this is affecting other groups of the population within my country, how this is affecting communities that depend on this, how this is affecting children, and how they are going to have a complete different childhood than my own. So I think being in this amazing country can also keep me motivating to do something to protect it. So I think that I always gain some inspirations of the mountains. I am a person that grew in the highlands, so mountains are like a really important part of me. So I think that getting that energy and that strength also helped me to keep going and advancing in this like advocacy pathway.
I was going to ask you, how do you manage your own feelings and stress about the future and the climate crisis? But I think I know. it's connected with the mountains, right? And nature.
Yes. I think that having spaces to disconnect from the world is really useful. And having the insight that you need to do that, because sometimes we are like in pilot mode. So we keep working and doing the things, but we don't recognize our emotions and our feelings. So I think that one of the main elements is to be self-aware of that, that you need to disconnect. And I really rely on my friends. to be honest, my support network, my friends, my boyfriend as well. So I think that my family is also a very important part of my support network. And it is really important just to speak about it, to recognize that you're not feeling really good. Sometimes, I'm not going to lie, I avoid things. So when I'm just feeling very, very overwhelmed about something and I'm just looking at social media and what's going on, I don't want to talk about the issue, so I start like avoiding and doing some other thing that can help me be less stressed. But at the end, it's something that you need to face and that you need to have these conversations on. So I think the challenge is to find balance on that. But what I will say is that I have a great support network. I do things to disconnect. I get connected to nature as well, and also do things that are good for me, do things that I enjoy in order to like recharge energy and then keep going.
We also asked you to bring, as we do always of our guests, to bring an object, something that means something to you or plays an important role in your life. Can you show us? I know you have something with you, two things, I think, right?
Yes.
So can you show them to us and explain what they are and describe, because this is an audio and video podcast, but not everyone will see the video. So maybe describe as well as show.
Okay. So I was really thinking about this when you asked me to bring in a special object, and I bring two objects. One is Red Cross related and the other is more personal related. So I will start with the personal related one. And if you can see, is this magnet. It's a magnet that in Spanish said, el camino es la meta, que nada te detenga. And in English, this can be translated as, the pathway is the goal, let nothing stop you. And this magnet was a gift from one of my dearest professors of university. One day I went to her office feeling really lost about my life and what I was going to do after getting graduated. And she gave me this this magnet in order to remind me that the goal is not like the final goal, but to enjoy the path that we walk every day in order to get to that goal is important. To enjoy our ups, our downs, the insights that we get, all the learnings, all the challenges that we face as well is important. So I try really hard to remind me that every single day, as I'm really self-critic about myself and not really supporting me enough. So I'm like changing that, working on that, but having that magnet is really special for me because it's a reminder of enjoying where I am right now, enjoying my pathway, mm-hmm. and keep working on that. So that's one that's really special for me.
And okay, thank you.
The other object is actually this bracelet, and you can see it's a Red Cross bracelet. And this mm-hmm. was a special gift of a very, very special person. And it was a gift from at the beginning of my start in the Red Cross. I get involved at first as an intern of the youth program, not really knowing anything about what Red Cross was doing at that time. And this person came to me. He didn't know me that well at that time. And he made me this gift. And he told me that he saw in me the mystic of the Red Cross. And that he saw that I was able to contribute in this. And that I have something that is deeply connected with Red Cross values and Red Cross vision. So I was really shocked at first and was like, okay. But then as I keep advancing and after I get enrolled as a volunteer, I do recognize that I feel very connected about Red Cross, objective, like all the principles, all the things that we do in the movement is like really important and deep connected with me. So this bracelet is a reminder of keep going, of like sometimes getting strength in order to being here, sit with you talking. I was feeling very nervous at first, but I really enjoyed the conversation. So I think these two elements are really important, and I rely on them when I need to gain like an extra support.
Beautiful, beautiful bracelet, by the way.
Thank you.
And the path is the way, right? The path yes. is the goal, right?
Yes.
So beautiful sentiments. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thanks,
so
Sasha.
In closing, with all that is going on in the world, at the end of the day, who or what inspires you, brings you comfort or hope? I know you told us about these two items, actually, that remind you to keep going and what really matters. But perhaps you have another thing or a person that inspires you or mm-hmm. brings you comfort to keep you going.
I think a lot of complex situations are going on in the world right now. And it definitely is a challenge for hope to like keep positive about this. Sometimes I'm not the most positive person, but I think one of the main persons is my mom. My mom has always been there encouraging me. She's really positive about everything, and she's like always pushing me to have a more positive perspective, to keep going, to believe in myself. And I think that all of the things that she does every single day inspires me to keep going, inspires me to find comfort. I always go and hug her when I am very overwhelmed about everything. So I think that those elements give me hope to keep working for her, to keep doing things to support her. So I think that that is one of my main motivations.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I love the fact that your mom is your inspiration. I think that's really beautiful. And I'd also like to ask you, as you know, the name of the podcast is People in the Red Vest, and you're wearing one. What does the red vest mean to you?
For me, the red vest means a responsibility to acknowledge the importance of Red Cross, to amplify the voices of other volunteers when I have a platform on, to recognize that it is important to stick to the principles, that it is important to do your best when you are wearing this vest or when you are wearing a uniform, to recognize that people in the community rely on you when they see you with the Red Cross vest, with the Red Cross uniform, and that it is important to be ready and to be the best that you can be prepared in order to better serve the communities, in order to better represent what the Red Cross movement is doing. So for me, it can sum up in a responsibility to be really at the level of the best.
Thank you so much, Anna, for sharing your thoughts and expertise with us. It was really wonderful to talk to you, and great to have met you in person last year, and I hope to meet again very soon.
Thank you, Sasha, and thanks to all the people that will hear us. I've been really enjoying this conversation with you. It has been really amazing to see you again as well, and I also hope to see you in person soon.
Thanks for listening to People in the Red Vest, a podcast of inspiring stories as told by people from the IFRC. This podcast was produced by Malcolm Lucar and me, Alexandra Sasha Gorishek, with production and engineering support from Damien Naylor. Promotion and marketing by Maxime Bouchard and Irina Ruano, graphic design by Valentina Shapiro, and web support from Chris Aqua.
For more inspiring stories, subscribe to wherever you listen to podcasts.